Hey there, you're with Disembodied Podcast. This is Evie Escher. This week I've got Mike Cavalli with me. Mike is a healer, a medium, and the author of two books. He's also recently released a documentary. We're not really going to cover his books in this interview, but I will tell you what they're about. He has a book called Reversing Disease Naturally, and this is a book that offers solutions, including forgotten or forbidden cures not available to doctors and therapists, but perfectly legal and simple to self-administer at a fraction of the cost of more expensive treatments. And he's also got a more recent book called Proof of Survival from 2018, and that is a development guide for evidential mediumship. Mike has a call-in show and a weekly video blog called The Mediumship Show. He also runs healing and spirit communication circles both in Vienna, Austria, where he lives, and online. So what Mike is really excited about is that he just put out a documentary about the real Joan of Arc called I Am Jeanne. For many years now, Mike has maintained a spirit connection to Joan or Jeanne, and we'll definitely delve into that. It's pretty interesting. So sit tight. Here we go. Mike, welcome to Disembodied Podcast. It's great to have you.
Thank you, Evie, and thanks for having me on your show. And I'm looking forward to thrashing out a few things with you.
Yeah, I'm interested in your whole setup. You're living in Austria right now. You're a Brit living in Austria, but you're an evidential medium. And I kind of want to delve into that. When did mediumship start with you? Was it when you were really young, or did it happen when you were a little older?
No, I was really young. I must have been about 5 years of age. And the story of this is that I was playing on my bed, and my brother was on his bed next to me, and I was playing with some marbles, and I decided these marbles looked like lovely sweets, and I put one in my mouth and it got stuck. The next thing I remember was that I was sitting at the end of the room. I was cross-legged. I was very calm, and I saw my body slumped over and my brother running out the room saying, "Mum, Mike swallowed a marble and he can't breathe." I remember clearly my mum coming in and bashing this marble out of me. And I remember seeing all this, and there was no panic. There was nothing to be afraid of. I was certainly disembodied at that time, but I wasn't dead. It wasn't a near-death experience. It was an altered state experience, I would say. And then I just remember being back in my body, feeling very humbled. And from then on, I saw spirit. And, you know, we say that spirit, they're translucent and you can see through. Well, I couldn't tell the difference for a long, long time between spirit and a regular human person, because they look solid to me. And I'd have this boy and girl, brother and sister in spirit, that would follow me around everywhere. And I would say, "Mum, you know, my friends are here. Can you lay the table for them as well?" And, you know, of course, as soon as my mum would appear, the kids would disappear, because they didn't like my mother and father's energy, because they are real Catholics. And, you know, you Catholics, you don't believe in this sort of thing. So eventually they knocked it out of me. But that was the start of my mediumship, when I didn't realize I was a medium, but I saw spirit as clearly as I could see anyone standing in front of me. That was the start of it. And then the teenage years, it sort of come and went, and, you know, I did teenage things. And eventually I decided, for some unknown reason, about the age of 19 or 20, to go to a seance. But I was curious always. I'd go for walks in cemeteries. And I don't know why. Now I know why. But I was always drawn to the afterlife for some reason. So I went to a seance, and this is where, actually, because we'll probably talk about it after, I first made my connection with Joan of Arc. And so from there on in, it was like the quote from the Mafia movie, you know, I couldn't be bothered with it with a lot of the time because I was growing up and business was important. But in that old scene, every time I tried getting out of this business, something pulled me back in. And I was always getting pulled back into mediumship until about the age of 26. I threw my hands in the air and said, OK, you got me. I did continue my work for another 20 years before I did this work professionally.
So how did your family and friends accept all this? Were they aware of it kind of all along, or did you hide it from them?
Pretty much hid it from them, which I kind of regret now, understanding energy and vibration a lot now. Yeah, funny thing, when I used to come home from circles and development circles, my dad would always ask me, well, what happened? What went on? He was really curious. But in public, he would never like to have said, oh, you know, my son's a medium or anything like this. And people at work, you know, I was in the construction game, and most of them, it would have just meant them laughing at me 5 days a week, you know, which could get tiresome. And so I ended up having a circle of friends that were trainee mediums and trainee healers. And then the rest of my life was separate. And so, yeah, my family, my cousins and my aunts, they didn't know too much about it until actually they started losing people in their life themselves. And they wanted to know more about it. So, yeah, it's can be, on the human side of things, a very lonely place to be as a medium.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's alienating in a way. And I think some people might be worried that you would know too much about them. And I can see a lot of like issues that would come up.
Yeah. With regards to knowing too much about people, you don't actually have to be a medium. Just train on the psychic level and you can know quite a lot about people. A lot of the time, my work involves people writing to me with their issues, psychic issues, or emotional issues. And you can see in the text that they're hiding something. You know, you just learn how to read energy from text, energy around people in much the same way, you know, if I always give this example. If you're in a relationship and, or let's say a mother, the child comes home from school and mum says, how did school go today, son? And he says, really good, mum, I enjoyed it. Mum will know if her son didn't have a good day. Mum will know if her son perhaps is getting bullied or not doing so well at school. So you don't actually have to be a medium to know that. You've just got to want to be aware and train yourself for it. Then yes, you can know pretty much quite a lot about people. That's true. But I would say, and I don't do it because I've got my life to get on with as well, and not to sit there looking at people and say, oh boy, this one's going through hell, or boy, you'll end up crazy. So for me, I set times, you know, we agree that when I'm not doing mediumship, they don't bother with me. They don't try to come through. And when I'm on a bus or something, I try to be in the moment and not look at people's auras or their energies and try and help them without their permission, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. You know, the unsolicited side of reading is probably not a good one. It's you involving yourself too much with other people's problems.
Exactly. And you have to be very, very strong to not bring those emotional problems onto yourself as well. Even though, you know, you can go home and be quite happy, quite joyful, but at the deeper level, are you bringing those problems on? There was a great healer, he's passed away now, Bruno Göring, I think his name is, and he died of a cancer, I think, but he said it was the thousands of people that he healed. At some level, he was absorbing all their energy. And that's what, you know, made him ill and eventually took his life. I mean, just on a side note, this man was Grunig, that's it, Grunig. He was such a healer that the German government banned him from healing. because he was curing people all over the place. And so he had to end up doing it very, very quietly and privately in the end. So it isn't good to continue trying to help people where you haven't been given permission. I think it's okay to send a little prayer and a little kind thought, but then we have to get on with our everyday life as well.
Right. I know. I remind myself of that sometimes when I'm driving around and I see like animals that have been hit on the side of the road and they're dead, you know, but I mean, I always think, oh, you know, like you kind of wish you could have prevented these things somehow and, you know, but you can't. And you, there is a component of death in everyday living that you have to confront. You know, we're not like animals and people are not forever bodies. You know, we're going to shed these bodies and move on. But I'm also interested in knowing what types of techniques did you use to develop mediumship? You talked about being in circles and stuff, working with other people. How was that functioning to elevate your own mediumship?
Well, when you work in a circle, especially if it's a spiritual church, first of all, there is a lot of energy that's really conducive to promote mediumship because it goes on there two services a week. And then you have the healing circles, you have the mediumship circles. So the energy is there for a start. And you're, of course, working with experienced people in that circle. And so from there, you learn, they teach you certain aspects of it where you shouldn't say certain things, where you should say, do you understand why they're telling me this? Or do you understand this? You never say certain things that can lead them to give you the next part of the answer. And when you get that discipline, you kind of get used to, or spirit gets used to, a way of working with you. And throughout all the circles, sometimes they work with you clairvoyantly, sometimes it's clairaudiently, sometimes clairsentiently. For me, it was a combination of all things. And so I could be giving a reading, for example. We used to do open platform night when we were training, and the congregation would come and allow us to practice on them. And when you get on the podium, as it were, and you start doing your reading, sometimes it'd come clairvoyantly, and then you'd get the smell of grandma's perfume or the whiskey that dad used to drink, you know, something like this. And the trick is, as I was taught, was to always be aware. Just be aware of what's going on around you. So it's pretty much, you know, like you're driving a car. You're driving the car, but you've got to be aware of what's going on around you. And with mediumship, it's the information is coming in all directions from different aspects of it. And you can sometimes see the spirit, especially if there's a big group of people. Sometimes they'll just transfigure over the face of someone. And then, you know, that's the person I've got to go to. And you've already got somebody that you can describe to them. So that's how a spiritual circle develops. And then you've got to have the courage to go out on your own at some point. And that's the exciting bit. Spiritual churches, they're very generous people. And if you're not that good, they're still very kind to you, you know. It is a church. But if you're trained well, then you get good results. And I was also taught as well that it's not always the medium. Sometimes the recipients may say they're willing to hear from someone, but they're really not willing to hear from somebody. And how do we know when we're at the church and we're giving a reading and say, well, I've got your husband here. It's all very well to presume that they loved each other dearly, but maybe she was glad to get rid of him in the end. You know, we really don't know. So we have to have such an open mind and keep this channel open. And sometimes it is the recipient, the person who's receiving the message, perhaps doesn't want to hear it, and then they close themselves off. But it's a great feeling as well, because you know when you're at, I know when I've got something very accurate, that I get this tingle right down my spine. And that always tells me that I've interpreted what they've said absolutely correctly.
It's like a little gut check, except it's in your spine.
Yeah. And there is a difference between a nice shiver and not a nice shiver as well. So, and I would encourage anyone, if you want to do evidential mediumship, which, is actually bringing forward loved ones from spirit rather than a psychic reading, which is helping people with their problems, then, I recommend always in a spiritualist church to start your training.
I've attended them here in California. There's a couple that I've been to, but it was years ago and I haven't been since. But I kind of notice when I get my own messages from the spirits I interface with that I have that. A lot of times I turn off the message. If I don't like the message, I will kind of like try to tweak it as it's coming in. I can feel myself doing that.
Yeah.
So I've had to work on myself lately to not, to just be more open to it and to not resist it.
Yeah. And I think this is one of the problems that all mediums face as well. The hardest thing is to receive and accept a message for yourself, because your own conscious thoughts often get in the way of it. When we do this technique called table tipping, which we can talk about, it was actually, I think, the Fox sisters discovered this knocking technique. But I would never, and I don't ever use the table for myself to ask questions on my own, because the influence you can have over the table when you've got an emotional attachment to the question can, and very often does, alter the answer, and you overpower the spirit, as it were. And so you're not getting the spirit giving you the answer, you're using their energy and your emotion and intention to get the answer. So I never use, it's the same for me with a pendulum. I never use the pendulum to ask questions for myself, even when I'm absolutely conscious of not trying to influence it. Somehow I do. So I always ask, write the questions down, give the questions to someone else, and get them to say those questions in a random order so that I've got no idea of what's being said. But to hear clairvoyantly or clairaudiently your own messages is tough. That is a tough one.
Yeah, I think there's no point in your life where you're not going to need to develop yourself still. So I think that whether it's emotionally, financially, whatever, there's always areas of your life where you still need development, even as you get older. And so I think the messages are always going to be helpful, even if they don't sound so good.
Well, this is the thing as well. We often say, sort of coin a phrase, oh, dear God, please help me. Please help me resolve this. And so he does, but not in the way you like, but he resolved it for you, Obviously, I'm being a little bit devil's advocate. So what I learned is we have to be specific, exactly what we want. And this is the same with manifestation. We have to be absolutely specific when we want to manifest something. Otherwise, an example of this is, people say, I want a beautiful relationship. Well, yeah, the universe will keep you wanting a beautiful relationship because that's what you asked for. You've asked for the energy of wanting. So it'll keep you wanting. And so if you, for example, wish to be in a loving relationship, I don't think there's any one word that can describe it. You've got to see it in your mind. You've got to be that loving person to attract the love that you want. And spirit will help you with that as well, because now that they're going to match that frequency for you. But otherwise, you're in the frequency of wanting. And so it's never ending, So if you want spirit to help you and develop and grow, we really have to be very much aware of what we're asking for. In other words, our intention is absolutely imperative to the outcome.
Right. And I think sometimes it means you have to do work on yourself to achieve that thing, because you're not receptive to it in a lot of ways. And, beautiful relationship is a great example. But I think you can have a beautiful relationship with animals and distant friends, even. It's kind of a vague concept, a beautiful relationship. But so many people want a relationship, but yet are not making room for the relationship that they really want.
Yeah, I mean, to have the relationship you want, you've got to live your life within the framework of the relationship that you want in order to attract that person. Or even if you're in a relationship, you want that relationship to get better, something has to change. Something has to grow or develop. I mean, I think Einstein said to do the same thing over and over again and expect something different is madness. So, you know, yes, there has to be self-awareness. There has to be growth. And as somebody pointed out, which doesn't help today, we've gone from the age of enlightenment to the age of entitlement now. And this seems to be buried within people's psyche now. You know, my rights, and don't want to work on themselves to get what they want. It should be given to them. And I think that's got to change. And if you want a good relationship in anything in life, you have to work on yourself first. You can do it through the spirit world. You can do it through the quantum field. Is there a difference between the spirit world, the quantum field, and us? We're all energy. We're all frequency. Either way, I think you've got to take self-responsibility, make clear intentions for what you want, and it will come. It's very, very clear. You will get the exact match of the frequency you are at the moment. And I think we've seen this time and time again. So, you know, you can pretend to be love, but if your frequency is of anger, then you're going to meet more people of anger. But if your frequency is of love, then you're going to meet beautiful people all the time.
You're right. You know, you have to have that self-awareness and want to do the introspection, which is really the hard part. And as you get older, you probably are more resistant to doing it. Maybe you got to start at some point when you're maybe, well, I guess, I don't know. I mean, maybe people do make progress in their 40s, 50s, but it's a hard thing. I think it's better to learn it earlier rather than later.
I mean, for me, I'm a learning it later. And because my life path was different, you know, I came to Austria and I've been here about 15 years. But prior to this, I was traveling backwards and forwards every weekend to look after my mother. My father passed away and she was on her own. And so basically my life up until about 15 years ago was looking after my mother to make sure that she was okay. I mean, it wasn't an everyday aspect of my life, but it consumed a lot of time. And she passed away. And so suddenly I was now available to step into my authentic self. So for me, it comes later. For some people, it comes earlier. I think the important thing is to just, you know, not worry about time. Oh, you know, I'm getting on in years now. Maybe it's passed me by. No, not really. You know, we see musicians. My wife's a musician, and some of these musicians live into their 90s, 95, 96. Why? Because they're always doing something. They're always being active. They're still passionate about what they do. And this is one of the key aspects of it, is not to say, you know, oh, well, at 65, I retire now. Well, yes, then you're in the retirement frame of mind and your body will start to shut down over many, many years. So I don't see personally time as any factor in this. I'll keep going until I'm of no use to society anymore. And then hopefully I can go back home.
And then you can come back again.
I'm not coming back again. But yeah, I've been told I'm not coming back, and this is my last time. Thank God.
You're graduating.
Yes, I'm getting my stripes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. So what is your concept of the cosmos? I mean, who do you think you're interacting with besides maybe dead loved ones?
Wow, what a question. Well, I channeled a message once, and you know, it said that God, the divine, which is the universe, which is everything, is within us, and therefore we are part of the divine, therefore we are of godlike quality, we are therefore part of the universe, we are everything that always was, is, and will be. It's just that when we come down to this earth plane, we get bogged into a time frame which is pretty much illusionary, because when we're over on the other side in the fifth dimension anyway, there isn't time the way it is we see it today. Many NDE experiences will tell you they saw the past, present, and the future all simultaneously. So the time over there doesn't exist. And it, remember, it's our soul, our essence, that picks up the energy and is the communication. My soul at the moment is communicating through somebody called Mike, but this suit eventually comes off and Mike, the soul, goes off into the cosmos again. But we, I'm sure you know this, communicate when we're in sleep state. We either leave our body and go in the astral world, or our mind is open, that we're, that the higher realms are allowed to communicate with us and give us information, and we receive it that way. I just think we have to understand that we are the past, present, and the future, and we are all that was, is, and will be. And at the moment on this earth plane, we chose to come here to do a certain job, which restricts our understanding of how great this cosmos is. What I would also say is that the expanding universe that they talk about, I'm pretty sure, is because of our thoughts. Every time a thought goes out, the universe expands. And that's why we have this ever-expanding universe. So it's a big subject, and I'd recommend anybody to listen to or watch plenty of these NDE experiences that people have, and they'll tell you some amazing things. But yeah, the cosmos actually is not very quiet out there. It's a very noisy place as well. So it's something I think we can all look forward to. And soon as we leave our body, you know, it's like we meet people that we never saw on the earth plane, but we know them because we're communicating with them when we're in sleep state. So there is no change in that respect. It's just that we're now open to the forces of everything. Now, I was told the other day, or a couple of weeks ago, that when we go back home, as it were, we can enjoy many varied experiences. So, for example, if I want to experience what it was like to be Elvis Presley on stage, I can do that. If I want to experience what it's like to be Joan of Arc, I can experience that. I can experience just a minute of their lives, or I can experience the whole life. Now, on the earth plane, with Elvis, for example, that would be 45 years of my time. But in the spirit world, it is no time. So time isn't of the essence. Time isn't of any consequence. So, you know, it's a really exciting place that we're going to. And I know I'm just sidetracking a little bit, but you mentioned about the animals that you saw, you know, that was dead at the side of the road. And my understanding is that animals have no fear of death. They just know that, okay, I'm finished here and I'm stepping into the next adventure. They don't see death or dying in the same way as we do. So, okay, if it's a roadkill, that's unfortunate. But if our pets are so ill, riddled with cancer or something, that the kindest thing to do would be to send them home. They don't threat or get fearful for their life knowing that you're going to kill them. They just say, okay, you know, I'm ready, I'm, take me, and off they go. We can learn from that, actually. And I think Catholicism has taught us to be God-fearing, which the God I know is not God-fearing, but Catholicism taught me that. So I've said a lot of things there. I hope I answered the question.
Well, I was going to follow up and ask you, do you pray to anybody for help?
Yeah, my prayers, perhaps. Oh, when I do healing, I'll always, the only prayer that I really do from my childhood, which I have a great energy with, is the Our Father, the Pater Noster. But other than that, my prayers are usually with action. I take on an action, for example, a healing action, and then I will ask spirit to help me. I might sing, I'm within inside of myself, I might say a mantra within inside of myself, But I don't go through, let's say, the religious prayer that I was traditionally brought up with. So, yes, I do pray, but in my own way. And every night when I go to bed, well, it's not every night, during the day as well sometimes, but I'm always in communication with Joan of Arc, and always speak to her before I go to sleep. And actually I say, look, you know, tonight, if I'm out of my body, can we help heal my cat tonight? And, or, you know, I wonder where you're going to take me tonight. So I do say prayers, but not in the traditional sense. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. So why do you think you're so connected to Joan of Arc?
I remember when I was a little kid and I saw a rerun of a Joan of Arc movie, Cecil B. DeMille, I think it was. And I remember as this sort of 5-6-year-old kid watching this and getting very sad and eventually crying, watching this movie. And so I turned it off and ran out the room and wiped my eyes because I didn't want mum to come in and see me crying. So that was my first thing with her. And then I did, at some point, many years later, a past life regression. And somebody told me that, I don't remember this at all, but I worked in a church in the period of 1429, and Joan came in, and I was so in awe of her that I went off and followed her and worked with her. Once that past life regression happened, sporadically from time to time, I'd get this band of energy around my head like this. And at this time, I was growing into mediumship. And thoughts of her would start to come in. And I'd say, okay, you know, thinking maybe it's me, maybe it's not. But then I did a table tipping session, my first table tipping session. And this is where you put your hands on the table and then the table starts moving backwards and forwards, rocking backwards and forwards. And it's spirit doing it. And I did this in a circle with some people, and the table moved towards me. And we always do questions to verify who's at the table. And it spelled out the name Joan. Now, it spelled out Joan. It didn't spell out Jeanne or Jeanette, which is her name. She spelled it out in the way I knew at the time. And so, okay, then we asked, where was you born? And she spelled out the first two letters of where she was born, Domremy. And then I knew. And once I accepted it, then her energy came flooding in. And oops, and she never left me since. And I've worked with her ever since. And I kept it all under guard, all under wraps. And it was at the COVID period, she said, you can start coming out now with this. And at the end of the COVID period in Austria, she said, now, do it. You can, you know, tell people that me and you are connected. And I do. I think the timing's right, because obviously some people would think you're nuts. Some people would think you're working with a demonic force that, you know, says it's Joan of Arc. But there are a lot of people who feel the energy of Jeanne d'Arc, as we call her. And she's been with me ever since then. And the more I do work for her, the stronger the connection gets with her. So that's been a long journey.
So that's really interesting. And you've done a documentary about her as well, right?
Yeah. And we got the premiere tomorrow.
Wow.
On the 30th of May. And tomorrow at 8 a.m., 593 years ago to the day she was executed. So the documentary is about the real Jeanne d'Arc. And she guided me all the way through this, because this story that they tell of that she was a peasant girl, a herd of sheep and cattle, poor parents, barely keep a roof over their head, is absolutely false. It's a complete nonsense. The only truth thing about it is that she was a very religious person. She wasn't a spiritual person. She was very religious and very pious. But the rest of it is really just made up romanticism. You know, she, the family were what were called vavasseurs. They were low grade nobles. They weren't peasants. They owned the only stone building in the village. Her father was dean of the village who had administration duties and military duties, and she would have got her military prowess from her father. And, you know, the stories that she couldn't ride a horse, and it's all a romantic notion. But actually, the real story is so far more romantic and so far more intriguing than the story that's given. And so we give the real story, looking into the trial and rehabilitation transcripts of her real personality, because this was really a dynamic lady. This was somebody that when she spoke, people listened. You know, there was something different about this girl. And she couldn't have done what she did without knowledge of law, without military knowledge, knowing how to speak to the nobles and all these people that she had to have met. So this was really a really striking character. And I believe she did hear her voices, that they weren't imagination. As a medium, I know this. And so she had clear instruction from her saints. And that gets back to the point that we was making, you know, it's easier to get instruction for someone else than it is to yourself. Because when she did have instruction for herself, she often didn't act upon it. And this is what got her into a lot of trouble. But yeah, the real story of Jeanne d'Arc is just one of the most beautiful and amazing stories that you'll ever come across. So we give the what I call the real version, looking into the trial and rehabilitation transcripts, and Jeanne giving me a nudge at the back to say if this is correct, that isn't correct. You know, when I was doing the editing, when I'd say, okay, I think that's acceptable, nope, she'd be there and something just would not let me stop the editing. I had to finish bits of this editing, and only when she said it was acceptable could I feel that I didn't need to do any more editing on this part. So she was behind me all the way with this. And so I feel really honoured with her. So, yeah, it's out tomorrow for the first showing. And then I'm at the United Nations on Wednesday for the Mind Body Group, showing it there as well. So we're showing it in some pretty powerful places already, which I'm pleased to say.
Yeah, that's really cool. You know, she's kind of a prototype for feminism. And the fact that she was so severely treated by society, she was burned at the stake, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it kind of shows like the glimmer of hope, you know, that women can kind of rise to a higher level in society, even in a time when that wasn't normal. And then the hopes dashed because she was burned at the stake. You know, she was rejected by society.
It was a classic example here. You know, when she was burnt, you know, the church under the English rule wanted her out the way because the people would only listen to Joan of Arc. They wouldn't listen to the church. The English wanted her out the way for obvious reasons. She caused mayhem. And one of her prophecies was within 7 years, all of England will be out of France, except those that die here. And the historians recognize that 6 years and 8 months, I think it was, that England, their campaign in France was finished and that they were leaving. But also the king who she got crowned wanted her out the way because he was now crowned by a heretic. And that didn't do him any good at all. You know, his position was severely weakened. So everyone wanted her out the way. But, you know, it's a strange thing to say, but she would have known before she came on the earth plane to do this work what the outcome was going to be. And I talk about in the documentary, you know, it's the same with Judas who betrayed Christ. It had to have been agreed in the spirit world for him to do this in order for the prophecy of Christ to be fulfilled. These are not random acts that we see. And Jeanne would have had to have known that she was going to end this way in order for the prophecy to be fulfilled. She made some quite brilliant prophecies. And without the burning, we probably wouldn't be talking today about this. You know, divine planning, human planning are two different things. What's interesting at the burning is that when they did the first burning, the executioner, who was a very experienced executioner, was struck by the fact that her heart was still intact. It didn't burn. Some of her clothes weren't burnt and her entrails were left. So they had to do a second burning, of which her entrails remained, and then they did a third burning. And the point is they had to throw everything in the river because they didn't want martyrdom. They didn't want the opportunity of the French people hanging onto a piece of bone or cloth and, you know, promoting this uprising. However, human planning and divine planning are two different things, especially, you know, because of time, because the idea of not wanting a martyr didn't exactly work. Not only was she a martyr, but she was immortalized and became a French national hero. Three things at the time they didn't want. And here she is. She has stood the test of time. And we go into the documentary about, you know, we are all Jeanne d'Arc today. You know, Rosa Parks, who refused to sit at the back of the bus in 1955 simply because of the color of her skin, is Jeanne d'Arc. Ruby Bridges, who you may remember, the young Afro-American girl who had to be escorted into the all-white Louisiana school by federal guards, federal agents, and escorted out. She is Jeanne d'Arc. Emilia Pankhurst, who gave her life for the suffragette movement. The ridiculous notion of women having the right to vote. You know, I mean, these people are the spirit of Jeanne d'Arc. So Jeanne d'Arc is alive today within many, many, many people. And one of my jobs was to take her out of the history books and bring her back into life, and so that people can have the courage to do or be their authentic self in spite of such adversity. If you're gay, be gay. You know, it doesn't matter what anyone thinks. Be your authentic self. Have the courage of Jeanne d'Arc. When you work from the heart center, the heart doesn't fear any consequence. It just does. And that's what Jeanne did. She worked from the heart center. It didn't fear consequence. And I say to all people, whatever, whoever you are, whatever you are, whatever you want to do, do it from the heart center. Have the courage in front of this adversity and shine. And it's actually none of your business what people think of you. and when you take that policy, you see how you can move mountains. You see what you can do. You step out of the shadows and you become Jeanne d'Arc as well. So this is what we're trying to get across to people.
It's a good message because, you know, the thing that you learn as you get older is people are going to be critical of you no matter what. So you may as well be your authentic self.
Yeah.
Because if you stopped yourself in the past, people were still criticizing you no matter what. I mean, it's the nature of humans to criticize. So you're never going to win everybody over all at once or ever. You're always going to have some holdouts that are like, you're full of shit. You know, I don't like you, whatever. So I feel like your message is a good one. It's a valuable one. And in this day and age, supposedly we've gained some tolerance. We need to hang on to it and gain more tolerance.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think also that the message is for everyone now to step out of the shadows, because I look around and I work with a lot of people who want to be so much but are so frightened to be more than what they are. Some people won't be what they are because they want security of the job, security of work. And I understand all that. But, you know, as Jeanne said, and it's the opening of the documentary, and it's every man gives his life for what he believes, and every woman gives their life for what they believe. Some people believe in little or nothing. Nevertheless, they give their lives to little or nothing. One life is all we have, and we live it as we believe. But to live it without belief is a fate more terrible than dying, more terrible than dying young. And so the question I say to people is, when your time to come home and you're in your last moments, do you want to say, well, at least I tried, or, you know, damn it, I didn't get to do this or I didn't get to do that? I think put yourself out there. We're not going to have the fate of Jeanne d'Arc. We're not going to burn at the stake. We're not going to all ruffle feathers, politicians and lawmakers, our courage that we need might be our own personal battle. But, you know, I spoke a moment there ago about, you know, if you're gay and you're still haven't come out yet, why not come out and be your authentic self? And you see how much you will change. And there's a lot of people, such as myself, will say, well, I don't really care, as long as you're happy. That's fine with me. You know, I've got a cousin, after 50 years, 52 years of life, decided he wanted to be a woman. And he said, I've always been a woman inside. He had the courage at 52, I think, to decide that he is now, he dresses up as a, he goes to work as a man. When he comes home, he puts on his women's clothes and he becomes a woman. And actually, quite a few members of my family, considering Italian Catholics, were quite supportive, but were those that were quite disgusted with it. And well, good luck to you. You look at yourself first. Take, you know, the splinter out of your own eye first before you want to take the sawdust out of someone else's. So it's important for him to come out and be free. And his life is better, and it's better for all the people around him. And this is how we must be. And you know, we've got to get out of this idea of judgment all the time. That's my cousin's life. It's not my life, right? You know? So I can support him. When I last saw him, I gave him a hug in all his women's clothes on. The time before that, I hugged him with his men's clothes on. It doesn't make any difference, you know? He is what he is. And if we're good people, we must accept who he is, because that's his life.
I agree. I feel like it's too petty and almost childish to reject somebody because they're not conforming to what you want them to conform to. And, you know, I know transgender people that are kind of like not clearly one gender or another. They tend to be in between sometimes, which is kind of, it's a little bit tough to know how to handle that sometimes, because you do have to ask people what pronouns to use. You know, I've actually come across this. It's not just like nowadays we're all putting pronouns in our signature block and emails and stuff as sort of a courtesy, but you actually come across that where you meet people and you don't know if they want to be considered a man or a woman because they look somewhat in between. You know, they can have breasts, but yet a beard, and, you know, it's complicated.
Yeah.
So this is a level of tolerance that we all have to rise to. And I see it as only petty and selfish to just completely reject people for that reason.
Yeah. And, you know, we have to look in the mirror at ourselves and say, you know, before I criticize or reject that person, am I so perfect? You know, and what sort of person am I to criticize, reject, or be disgusted because of someone's personal choices? This isn't a very spiritual approach to things. I think all the great spiritual leaders and ascended masters, these ideas of judgment of people like this don't ever come into play. And the other thing is, why waste your energy in criticizing somebody that really their life doesn't affect you anyway? The fact that you've now paid so much attention, in the case of my cousin, for example, for him dressing up as a woman, all that attention is now taking me away, for example, of what I need to be doing in my life. So in other words, I'm living rent-free in his head, you know, not me personally, because I wish him good luck. But so the trick is not to judge. Let people get on with it themselves and let them lead their life the way they want. What I do know is if I lead my life in a very authentic way and I lead it from the heart, then I know that people that I bump into can see that, even if they're not psychic, they can see if somebody's being genuine and authentic. And they might not like what I say, but because you're saying it from the heart, you know, people will accept it, I think, because my views on the recent health crisis have been completely different to other people's. But I have to say, I did get guidance from it, from Jean. So, but then I also have to expect that I don't expect other people to understand that. But it takes courage to speak, knowing that you may get condemned for it, for what you say. But if I don't be my authentic self, then who am I? That's, you know, the thing. It's a cycle, isn't it? You know, we go up and down, we're liked, we're disliked. And, you know, the more you stick your head above the parapet, the more some people will not like you. And actually, it's not liking you because of what you do. It's because you're moving your vibration further away from them.
Yeah.
And you now start moving into a vibration where people are of that same vibration. And now you're living, working with the cool people who are on that same level as you. And so as you do rise, yes, you will leave some of the people behind you. Most of my family are really stuck in the three-dimensional world of consumerism. They're not really in the 5D world of abundance for all and all that kind of thing. So I just hope, by not saying anything, just being me, they can see a different perspective. And I think that's all we can do, because it isn't our job to forcibly change people. We can help change the world by being ourselves and action, creating the action, creating the world that we want. And for me, creating the world I want is a world of courage, a world of people to speak their truth, regardless of what it will mean to other people. Some people like it, some people won't. But it's to free yourself from this worry about what people think. This is the biggest nightmare for people. And if you have the courage to do this, I never normally say trust me, but in this case, trust me, you will excel like you can't believe. And you'll be able to communicate with spirit world or your intuition much better, because that block is gone.
Yeah, it would change everything if people could get out of consumerism and pay attention to some subtle things in the universe that are perhaps coming their way. But it's hard. I mean, I remember being like younger and wanting to pursue spirituality, but I was always kind of sidetracked when I was younger. And then finally, I got to the point where maybe around the age, I'd say late 20s, where I started to focus on it more. But there's always distractions even now. I feel kind of taken away from it sometimes, and then I get back into it. And you're always reminding yourself of your higher capabilities. That's what you have to do. And not just focus on like getting and spending, you know, buying stuff and accumulating stuff and stuff that you can't really do anything with once you're dead, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is an ongoing challenge all the time. And I've found the less consumerism that I have to worry about, the more I have, in a strange sort of way. And so I have everything that I need. Everything else is excess. And if I do need something more, and it's something that's of value rather than just a new phone for the sake of the new phones come out, somehow more income comes to me, enable me to get this. And so that's, you know, letting go and allowing flow. Yeah, your intuition is much, much freer. It guides you and tells you what to do, where to go, you know. And no, Mike, you don't really need that. Okay, I don't argue with it. I don't need it. but then when I do need it, it will come back at me. And your path of spiritualism, when the time is right, it will no doubt say, okay, now it's time to get serious. And we will. And, you know, this work that you do is spiritual as well. So we all have our path, and the path is never a straight line. We all deviate off somewhere and take a new path. So for now, perhaps your spiritual journey is getting the message out from people such as myself to a wider audience. That is something that we can admire and something that's needed.
Yeah. Well, I feel like if people could just spend a little time each day, maybe not even, I wouldn't even say the word meditation, because people get worried about meditating, whether they're doing it right or whether they can do it every day at a certain time. So I wouldn't even say that, but if you could just remember that there's a spirit side to everything on a daily basis, you're already making progress to achieving maybe higher goals for yourself. If you can just remember that there's something else out there, and you're not just the materiality of this situation is not really the be all end all.
No. Well, I think on a scientific level, the HeartMath Institute proved that with their random event generators. They had these generators put all over the globe and they just randomly fired out numbers, you know, 1, 2, 1, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 1, 1, 2. And it was discovered that when a major event was taking place somewhere in the world, these numbers would go from random to non-random, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2. And as an example, four hours before the first planes hit the Twin Towers, all the random event generators went from non-random to random. And this indicated that the Mother Earth knew that something big was going to happen. And the fact that Mother Earth's heart frequency is in the same frequency as ours, which is about 7 hertz, I think, means that we are connected to Mother Earth, that we are not separate from Mother Earth. And they discovered that it was Mother Earth hearing what we knew was going to happen 4 hours before it was going to happen. So in other words, clairgustinence. All of us have this ability, clairgustinence. Except we couldn't recognize what the event was. But Mother Earth did. And the HeartMath Institute proves that we are connected to Mother Earth. And she heard our thoughts and we knew that something big was going to happen. And they did these experiments with all kinds of things. And it's amazing. So we get back to the cosmos again. We are connected with everything. And it's amazing.
Yeah. Well, I thank you so much for coming on and sharing about Joan of Arc and this documentary that people are going to be able to see here. And also just your mediumship. And I'd actually like to have you back sometime and talk more about your health. You have a book on reversing disease naturally, right?
Yeah.
So we'll have to have you back on in the future for that, because that would be another probably lengthy discussion, I would imagine, talking about.
I think so. Yeah.
So anyway, thank you so much, Mike, for coming on. And we'll put a link to your website in the show notes for this episode so people can connect with you.
Thank you very much. It's been great talking to you. You know, before I go, we started off by saying how lonely this world can be. So for mediums and spiritual people. So when we get to talk with someone like yourself, it's really gives me a lot of energy and a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of gratitude to be able to release this ball of energy that I have. So thank you very much.
Yeah, likewise. It's great to have the level of conversation that we can have. You know, I appreciate that so much.
Yeah, me too. Thank you.
Blessed listener, please leave your questions or comments for this episode or any other episode on disembodiedpodcast.com. Thank you so much.